This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. The journey of Lewis and Clark and the core of discovery up the Missouri River is often portrayed in heroic terms, intrepid adventurers, pioneers of manifest destiny. The descendants of the American Indians, whom Lewis and Clark encountered along the way, have very different and often mixed feelings about the historic expedition. South Dakota Public Radio's Kurt Nickisch reports.
People traveling the Lewis and Clark Trail through the Dakotas aren't exactly made to feel welcome at the Standing Rock Sioux Indian Reservation. A sign outside the tourist office reads, "If it's tourist season, how come we can't shoot them?"
"We welcome everybody within our terms."
LaDonna Bravebull manages tourism for the tribe, looking out across the Missouri River. She says she can't understand the fascination with Lewis and Clark.
"They didn't do anything. They came up the river on a little boat. They had no knowledge of the country. To us, they were like these people wandering around in the wilderness lost."
Bravebull wishes those wandering explorers didn't loom so large in her history. Lewis and Clark came famously close to battling her ancestors, the Teton Sioux, just down the river from here. Clark later called the Tetons vile miscreants of the savage race. Bravebull takes offense at those words and the ensuing history, the white settlement and government policies that confined her nomadic tribe to reservations. Bravebull puts the blame squarely on Lewis and Clark.
"Because of them, it changed our people forever. I don't know how a person could look at the messengers of death as heroes."
With such hard feelings, the Standing Rock Sioux are only half-heartedly taking part in the Lewis and Clark bicentennial commemoration. Plans for an interpretive center are up in the air, even though the anniversary of the explorers' trek through here is just a month away. But some American Indians say tribes like the Standing Rock are squandering a rare opportunity.
"We have a huge story with Lewis and Clark, or I should say, Lewis and Clark have a big story with us."
Amy Mossett is the Tribal Involvement Coordinator for the National Bicentennial Council. The Mandan Hidatsa woman says tribes should be jumping at the chance to tell their side of the story to the thousands of people following the trail.
"Those tribes that Lewis and Clark said the worst things about are the tribes that have to make the greatest effort to reteach all that erroneous kind of interpretation of their culture that was recorded by Lewis and Clark."
So far, two-thirds of the tribes have at least signed up to be part of the commemoration. It's made a difference. You can hear the emphasis on the Native narrative in the council's TV ads.
200 years ago, Lewis and Clark set out to discover an all-water route to the Pacific. But what they really discovered were 58 hospitable nations who could have ended their journey at any time, but saved it instead.
But even for tribes that want to have their say in the commemoration, issues like crushing poverty, unemployment, and gaming tend to rank higher on the priority list.
47 and 54, that's two good bingos. They will split $100. Are there any others?
It's bingo night on the Lower Brule Indian Reservation, which stretches along 80 miles of Missouri River shoreline in central South Dakota. This casino is one of the few employers. During a break between games, tribal member Kay Gorno rearranges bingo cards with fingers stained green from her blotter. She says 70% unemployment on the reservation is a pressing issue. Remembering Lewis and Clark is not.
"You know, we can't go back and live on the plains and follow the buffalo. That's over. So, you know, you got to do what you can to try to get our children educated and so they can compete in the world we live in now."
Still, bicentennial organizers warn that tribes' lack of involvement could mean they forfeit their history to the white settlers who took over their land.
"It was during a heat wave. It was only 4 below that day."
"Oh, yeah, right. Good old North Dakota winters."
Up to 600 people come here to the reconstruction of Fort Mandan each day. This is where the Corps of Discovery spent its first winter, close to where the Missouri River breaks west toward Montana. In the blacksmith's room, reenactor Dick Parrish heaves on a rope to flex the bellows. Then he pulls one of his creations from the wall, a gruesome barbed war club. Parrish says the explorers forged something similar to trade with the local Mandan tribe for vegetables.
"So it could have been totally ceremonial, yet at the same time, you must admit that anybody running after you on a horse with this thing waving in the air, headed right straight for your body, is going to give you a great amount of concern.
If American Indians were telling this story, they might emphasize instead the goodwill the Mandans showed by feeding the expedition. Indeed, historians say the Corps of Discovery could not have survived the winter here without Indian help. 100 miles upstream is the Fort Berthold Reservation, the contemporary home of the Mandan Indians. Tribal member Amy Mossett is watering her traditional garden. She grows beans and corn together in the same rows. That way the tall corn stalks are buttressed against the stiff prairie winds. The tribal involvement coordinator says this is how her ancestors grew the corn they gave to Lewis and Clark.
One of the things that I have told tribes along the trail is that we do have something to celebrate. During this bicentennial, we can celebrate the fact that we survived Lewis and Clark. And everything that happened after Lewis and Clark, we survived it all.
Mossett's going to keep trying to get tribes to play a bigger role in the commemoration. There's still time. It runs through 2006. She hopes that when tribes tell their story, it will secure an American Indian voice in the narrative for the next 200 years. For NPR News, I'm Kurt Nikisch.